Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 14 lines from the bottom of Daf Gimel. Before we begin the shiur, a word about the general structure. The comment that we want to make now concerns not only the beginning of our shiur here on Daf Gimel, but also regarding that which we will Emirtz Hashem see in our next year on Daf Dalet. On the side of the Gemara, we have a mivneh, a structural note. A diamond is featured. We also indicate that this marking has significance until Daf Dalet Omed Aleph. Namely, we'll see a diamond over here with a Roman numeral number 1 and another diamond on Daf Dalet Omed Aleph with a Roman numeral number 2. They represent Shnei Halochas Shel Reb Chiya, two Halochas of Reb Chiya. A double underline follows shortly, a few lines later, highlighting the expression V'tona Tuna. That means HaMishneh Shelanu, that our Mishnah Mehaveh Bosis LeReb Chiya, serves as a basis for Reb Chiya. In other words, Reb Chiya teaches a particular law, and Reb Chiya continues and tells us that what I'm teaching you is based on our Mishnah, the Mishnah of Shnayim Ochsin Betalis. You will notice we have a Nosei, a topic heading, which reads as follows. The Nosei until Dalet Omed Aleph, that's one long topic will preoccupy us. Kofer HaKol, someone denies a claim in its entirety. In other words, someone says, you owe me $100 that I loaned you. And the response is, I don't owe you anything. I deny owing you anything. I never borrowed money from you, or I paid you back in full. I don't owe anything. The Eidim Me'idim Shechayav Mitzas, and witnesses testify that he is obligated to pay, but only partial. Let's say only half. Witnesses say that you owe 50. In other words, you claim you didn't borrow anything. You borrowed $50. Haim hanitba chayav lishov al ashar. The one claimed from, the nitba, is he obligated to swear concerning the balance, to swear, I don't owe you the other 50. Dumya de moide b'miksa, similar to the well-known situation of moide b'miksas, where A claims from B. Mr. A says to Mr. B, you owe me $100. And Mr. B responds, I don't owe you $100, I owe you only $50. He concedes partial. The halacha says, based on psukim in the Torah, based on Gzeiras HaKosov, that when you're moide b'miksas, you have to swear that you don't owe the balance. In other words, if you concede that you owe 50, so 50 you'll have to pay. The other 50 you will swear and thereby be exempt from paying the balance. In this case, instead of the nitba, the one being sought out for payment, admitting to half, witnesses account for the half. Do we apply the same law? So Reb Chiya, in his in his teaching says that when one is sought out for payment and he denies everything, witnesses come and testify that he owes partial, he has to swear concerning the balance, namely that balance he does not owe. And Reb Chiya claims that that point is supported by our Mishnah. Now, before we get into the text, we have, we'll say, some additional structural information that we must deal with. If you look merely at the Gemara text, you notice the diamond followed by a framed section. Within the framed section appears Rabbi Chiya's din, and at the last two lines of the framed section, we have letters, Aleph and Beis. In order to make his point, Rabbi Chiya says, Aleph, he says, Shalotei hoidoas piv gdolim yadoas edim, and he says that is based on Mikal v'chomer. So there are two points that he makes that are, at first glance, almost unexplainable. You can't make sense of what you see in the source as to what he means. So a few lines later in the Gemara, you'll notice the house marking, and it's labeled Aleph, corresponding to the Aleph in the source, and further on Daf Gimel Mibbeis, on our Amud Beis, six lines from the top, you'll notice our second house marking, which explains the Kal V'chomer that he alluded to. So we explain both, the Gemara will explain both phrases of Rabbi Chiya. You'll notice that we open up our Gemara with a long marking, which we refer to as Divrei Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi Chiya's teaching. We call it, it's a long point. At the end of that long point, and Rabbi Chiya's claim that my teaching that you see in the frame source is supported by the Mishnah, a second bracketed section, a bracketed section appears. And the brackets that appear are unusually long. They will take you all the way to Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. Initially, we can say that you can actually skip an entire Daf of Gemara in order to maintain, we'll call, the logical flow. Rabbi Chiya here on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph claims that my din concerning the Edim that testify about the Miksas, the partial that you do owe, my claim, says Rabbi Chiya, is supported by the Mishnah. When you go to Daf Dalet Amud Aleph and you notice where the brackets end, so about halfway down the page, use your bracket length indicator, the Gemara at that point challenges Rabbi Chiya's claim that his din is supported by the Mishnah. And do you notice on Daf Dalet, do you notice where we would pick up Ela Tekomar V'tona Tuna, that which Rabbi Chiya claims that our Mishnah reflects his din, me dummy. How does our Mishnah, how in the world does it compare to Rabbi Chiya's din? Hasam. La malve isle sadi, la loiva isle sadi, the lomasik leva lomidi. In that case, in Ruchia's case, the malve has witnesses. The love, the malve is the one that loaned the money, he has witnesses that money is owed to him. The borrower has no witnesses that side with him that he doesn't owe anything. That's as far as Rabbi Chiya's case. One side has witnesses. The other side does not have witnesses. However, and if the Gemara there goes on to say, Dihavale sadi l'loyvi de l'masik leiv l'omidi l'oboy Rabbi Chiya shtabuye. Hacha. However, here in our Mishnah, with regard to the Shnayim Ochsim Betalis, Ki hechi adanan sadi l'hai, anan sadi l'hai, v'afilo achi mishtabi. In our Mishnah, both sides have witnesses. Whereas in Reb Chiya's case, yeah, he said there's an oath. That's because there only one side had witnesses, and the other side that was denying, he was denying in full, and he had no witnesses. So In order to substantiate his claim, he needs to swear. But in our Mishnah, I should say, but in Reb Chiya's case, if both sides had witnesses, each side witnesses supporting their claim, there would be no swearing that would take place. And yet in our Mishnah, we will discover, both sides has the equivalent of witnesses, and yet there is swearing that takes place. So our Mishnah cannot serve as a support to Rabbi Chiya. And at that point, which is beyond the framework of today's Shiur, but at that point in the Gemara, you notice it says, Ela ki itmar v'tona tuna, a'idot Rabbi Chiya itmar. The idea that our Mishnah supports Rabbi Chiya, yes, it supports another teaching of Rabbi Chiya, not the one with which we open up today's Shiur. So on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph, a second diamond appears, Roman numeral number 2. It's a second teaching of Rabbi Chiya. And a few lines after that, you see again the double underlined V'tana Duna, and our Mishnah supports a second teaching of Rabbi Chiya, the teaching that we have labeled there as Roman numeral number 2. As far as Rabbi Chiya's teaching per se, over there on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph, he says what he does, and shortly thereafter Rav Sheshes will disagree with him, but that's beyond the scope of today's Shiur. So what we've shown essentially is the superstructure of today's Shiur without involving ourselves at all with the text. All we've shown is that Rav Chiya opens up today's Shiur with a law. He claims that our Mishnah supports that law. At the end of the Gemara we see that the Mishnah cannot support that law. And the Gemara then will move on to another teaching of Rav Chiya where the Mishnah will serve as a support. Between the beginning and the end, we pay attention, we focus on the law of Rav Chiya and how he supported his teaching within his Tanaic source, where he made two points which were already labeled Aleph and Beis, and within the long bracketed section, the Gemara will be asking, what do you mean by Shalote Haidu'as Pibdome Ados Edim? That was point Aleph. And a reference to a Kalvachomer was made. That will be dealt with at great length. What was the Kalvachomer that Rabbi Chiya was working with? Now, we turn to the Gemara with the hope that the general structure has been more or less clarified. Tani Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chiya presents a Tanaic source. I should point out just parenthetically that Rabbi Chiya was a great rabbinic figure at the transition period between the Tanaic period and the Amoraic period. You will find Rabbi Chiya is the author of Brises, of Tanaic sources. Rabbi Chiya also appears throughout the Shas as presenting his own thinking, which we would refer to as Maimros, as opposed to Brisos. Maimros being his own personal teachings, as opposed to a Masoreic tradition of Tanaic sources. So, Rav Chiya here is presented as Toni Rav Chiya. Tosfos on Daf Hey actually presents an alternative girsa, that an alternative version that this is also not in fact a Tanaic source, but it's his own teaching. We'll leave that aside for the time being. We'll keep to the text that we have here. Toni Rav Chiya. Rav Chiya has a Tanaic source which reads, and we pointed out earlier, there's a long marking here. The source says, Mona li biotcha. A claims from B, you owe me $100. V'halomer, and B responds, Ein l'cha b'yadi klum, total denial. I don't have anything of yours. I don't owe you anything. V'edim, and witnesses, me'idim, testify. Me'idim oisoi, they testify concerning the one being claimed from. Sheyesh lo chamishim zuz, that he does owe 50 zuz. Zuz is a denomination of currency. We can refer to it as dollars. He owes $50. Noisein loy chamishim zuz v'yishovah l'ashar. The result of this is that you'll have to pay 50 and swear concerning the other 50 that you don't owe that. Because we want to avoid a situation where an oral confession without witnesses, a person comes forth on his own and says, you're asking for me $100,000, I don't owe you $100,000, I owe you $50,000. The other $50,000, I don't owe you. And in such a case, we know that he pays the amount he admitted, and the balance he swears. So in order that Haidu'as Piv should not be any stronger, any more demanding than the case of the witnesses, we say that in the case of the witnesses testifying about the partial amount, you do the same thing. You swear concerning the balance and pay that which the witnesses require you to pay. And the basis for Pia saying that is Mikal v'chomer, based on Kal v'chomer logic. As we said earlier, the Gemara will explain each one of these points. For the time being, let's go on in the Gemara text. V'tana tuna, and there is Tanaic support in our Mishnah to this teaching. What is taught in the Mishnah? Shnayim oichsim betalis, zoim rani mitzosia v'chule. Two people are holding on to a talis. First one claims, I found it, etc. V'ha-ha-ha, in the case of the talis, kevon de tofis, since he is holding on to it, anan sadi, we bear witness. This concept of we bear witness, the public, it's public. It's a public acceptance. It's a public given. That concept of anan sadi is like witnesses. So we bear witness. Demai de tofis hai didehu. That which he's holding is his. Demai de tofis hai didehu. And that which the other one is holding is his. Is his. Vikotoni ishava. And in order to settle the matter, we see a shvua is made. An oath is taken. We take a look at Rashi together. The Rashi that we're looking at is a few lines up from here. Anan sadi, demai de tofis hai, hainu palga, that which he is holding, which is half, is his. Didehu, sharei muhsiku, Rashi continues. It's his because he's holding on to it, befonenu, in our presence. Varehu tovea is kula, and he is demanding all of it. He's holding half, and he's demanding everything. The chaveru kofer is kula, and the other party denies him as owner of everything. Shomer kula sheli, v'af ma she'ato tofus biyotcha. Everything is mine, even that which you're holding is mine. V'yonu mi'ida moiso sheish lo ba mixas. And we bear testimony that which you're holding is yours, that you have half. U'mechayven es chavero shvua al hasha'ar. And we see that an oath is imposed regarding the balance. Da'inu chatsi she'ikev la'atzmo. The half that you are holding for yourself, you'll have to swear that the party will have to swear that he does not, the other party that is, will have to swear that he doesn't owe that. Now, as we pointed out earlier, at this point one could conceivably skip to Daf Dalid Omid Aleph, where our bracketed section ends, and read there in the Gemara how Rabbi Chiya's claim that our Mishnah reflects what he teaches is not accurate. There's a difference between our Mishnah and what he, Rabbi Chiya, teaches. That having been said, we now continue in the Gemara where we are. We have a house marking, and we mentioned earlier the house markings reveal the meaning of the two points noted in Rabbi Chiya's source with the Aleph and Beis. My shelote hoiduas piv gedoylo me'adis edim mikavachomer. What did Rabbi Chiya mean when he said that the reason that when witnesses testify about your in fact owing half the amount, that you'll have to swear regarding the other half that you don't owe it, so as to avoid a situation where hoiduas piv would be greater than the testimony of witnesses? What do we mean by that? Shaloi toimar hoiduas piv hu deramyo rachmona shvua alei. That you shouldn't come to say that it's only when you confess owing partial, then you swear. We have a bracketed section. Skip it momentarily. It takes you to the fourth line from the top of Omid Beis. Avo ha'ados edim deleko lemei marhochi. But with regard to the testimony of witnesses regarding the partial amount, where the logic behind moida b'miktzas hoidoas piv, your self-confession, doesn't apply, the logic behind hoidoas piv, which generates the need for an oath, that logic doesn't apply to the case of witnesses testifying about owing partial. Amalo, I would have thought that in the case of the witnesses testifying, there would be no need for a shvua. Kamash malon kalva homer. That, Rabbi Chiya tells us, is the reason that we need to have the kalva homer. Now, that having been said, we go back over the bracketed section. What do we expect to see in the brackets? We expect to see here the reason why moida b'miktzas, when someone partially confesses owing an amount that he was claimed, why there do we impose a shvua? So we continue four lines from the bottom of Gimel Amud Aleph. We say that in Hoidoas Piv, where a person is Modeh B'Miktzas, he has to swear regarding the balance that he doesn't owe that. Kidderabba. The reason for the Shvua is based on what Rabba teaches. The Omar Rabba. Mitnei ma omro Torah, Modeh B'Miktzas atayna yishofa. Why does the Torah say that when someone offers partial confession to a claim made against him, that he has to swear concerning the balance? And by the way, when a person is claimed from, you owe me, Mr. A claims from Mr. B, you owe me $100. Mr. A responds, I owe you, I confess that I owe you $50. We do not view that response as someone who is, we call in Hebrew, Meshiv Aveda, he's doing a favor in returning a lost article. Someone who returns a lost article, you wouldn't impose a shvua on him. Otherwise, you'll deter him in the future from carrying out the mitzvah, and you'll deter others from carrying out the mitzvah of returning lost articles. So that in the realm of Meshiv Aveda, we don't impose oaths. This fellow who is confessing owing part of the amount is not viewed as a Meshiv Aveda. He has to swear. Why does he have to swear? So we continue giving you the background. Chazoka ein odom meiz ponov b'fnei bal chovo. There's a given that people who received loans wouldn't have the nerve to deny owing anything. They wouldn't have the nerve to say, I don't owe you anything. V'hai b'kulei boi d'nichbere. In truth, he needs to admit to the entire amount. V'ha d'lo kafre, that which he doesn't deny. That which he doesn't deny. Mishum d'ein odo meiz ponov. A person wouldn't have the nerve, after having received a favor of receiving a loan, he wouldn't have the nerve to deny owing any money. V'hai, and we continue at the top of Daf Gimel Amid Beis, and we suspect that this guy who we hear partially admitting, Bekule Boy Delodi Lei, he really should be admitting to owing the full amount. V'hai Delo Odi, and that which he isn't admitting the full amount, Ishtamuti Odiko Mishtamet Minei, he's trying to literally escape from him, but for our purposes it means he's trying to avoid the lender, trying to buy time. So far, he figures, the borrower figures, Ad dahavu li zuzi uparanale. When I am able to amass the entire amount, I'll then pay him that which I in fact owe him. So what have we described so far? A person that we suspect, when he confesses part, that really he still owes the full amount. He's trying to buy time till he gets the money. So in the meantime, one thing is for sure, he's not going to deny the entire amount, because a person wouldn't have the nerve to do that. After receiving a loan from someone and owing the money, you wouldn't expect anyone to deny it completely. But yet he doesn't have the money, so he's trying to buy time. What does he do? He admits owing part, denying the other part. However, that denial is wrong. It's a lie. V'yomar rachmona, rami shvua alei. The Torah says, let's place an oath upon him, that if he claims he doesn't owe the other $50 of a $100 claim, swear to that. Ki hechi delo dilei bekulei, so as to motivate him to in fact admitting owing the full amount, so that the shvua is imposed if our suspicion is correct that he's simply trying to buy time, the shvua will deter him from denying the balance that he's currently denying. If he swears, then we say he must be telling the truth, that he owes only 50. But if he doesn't swear, he'll have to pay, revealing to us that he was merely, in his admitting part, he really owed the full amount and was just trying to buy time. All of that is the logic behind what we call moide b'miktsas, someone who partially confesses. We impose a shvu on him. Avol ha'ados edim deleko lemei marhochi. But in the case of someone who denied owing the money entirely, if a person is going to deny owing the money entirely, after someone is claiming you owe me as a result of a loan, you owe me $100, and the fellow responds, I don't owe you anything, you would think he's telling the truth. However, when witnesses come and say you still owe 50, he shows us that he is suspect of lying. Two witnesses are viewed in the eyes of the Torah as establishing truth, so that after you denied owing the entire amount and two witnesses come and say you owe 50, you have shown us to be choshud, to be suspect on money matters. And as a result of that, we might have thought that since he's choshud on momen, he'd be choshud also regarding a shvua, that his oaths cannot be relied upon either. That's what the Gemara means when it says, emolo, maybe when you have someone having fully denied and witnesses come in and testify that he still owes partial, maybe we wouldn't impose a shvua on him because we wouldn't trust his shvua. Komash Malon Kalvachomer. The Kalvachomer that Rabbi Chiya alluded to tells me not so. That if as a result of, and here we have to be careful, because what is the beginning point of the Kal V'chomer logic that you'll see goes through a couple of stages of analysis in the Gemara. But the Kal V'chomer eventually tells me that if the partial amount is testified by witnesses, the denied amount certainly will be subject to an oath. That the person denying the balance will certainly have to swear. That conclusion is the outcome of applying a certain Kal Vachomer logic. And that, of course, we have to wait and see what is the Kal Vachomer. But in the meantime, what we have done, we've explained the first point that Reb Chiya made in the source, that when witnesses testify that you owe part, you will have to swear, because otherwise we'd be putting on a higher pedestal someone who is moide b'mixas, hoidoas piv, and we don't want to have hoidoas piv gedoylo me'adoas edim. So if in hoidoas piv he has to swear concerning that which he denies, then certainly in the case of hoidoas edim, even though the logical basis for swearing in hoidoas piv doesn't apply in the case of hoidoas edim, where he denied completely, and he was revealed to be someone suspect of lying. Nevertheless, Rabbi Chiya says, through Kal Vachomer logic, even in that case, we will impose upon him, even in the case of witnesses testifying about the partial amount, the balance that he is denying, he will have to swear to that effect. And now the Gemara asks, Umay Kal Vachomer, so what is that Kal Vachomer that guides me to saying that even in the case of Hoados Edim, regarding the balance that the one being charged with continues to deny, will have to swear that he doesn't owe that balance. So what's the Kal Vachomer that leads me to that conclusion, that even in the case of Edim being made on Mixas, there too you'll have to swear? Before we present the actual Kal Vachomer, glance at the side under our Mivneh, our structural note, and you'll notice triangles appearing in two different directions, in alternating directions. We've written, HaMishulashim Miuadim L'Chavein Zrimas HaEchochois, triangles are designed to direct the flow of the proofs, and with a triangle facing up, that will be our attempt to show a Kal Vachomer. V'adachios, and the inverted triangle, would be the rejection, the Kal Vachomer, ladin shel Reb Chiya, the law of Reb Chiya, namely, that one who is kofer bakoil, one who denies totally, and witnesses, though, say he owes partial, that the denier will have to swear concerning the other part. We have a numbering scheme as well. You'll notice Roman numerals 1 and 2 that appear. They represent as follows. Bishlav, number 1, HaKal Vachomer Mevusas Al Hoidoas Piv. The Kal Vachomer that will lead to the law regarding witnesses, the jumping off point of the Kal Vachomer will be based on the concept of Moide B'Mixas, one's own confession of owing partial. Bishlav Sheni, Bishlav number 2, the second stage, you can see that is at the lower part of the page, 5-6 lines from the bottom. At that stage, the Kal Vachomer will be based Al Eid Echad, on the testimony of one witness, where we see in the Torah the testimony offered by one witness generates a Shvua. So certainly the testimony offered by two witnesses should generate a Shvua. Now that we've laid out the general structure, we continue now in the Gemara. We had raised at the last house marking that we saw 6 lines from the top where we're picking up, what is the Kal Vachomer? Uma piv she'ein mechayvoi momon. Mechayvo shvua. Mind you, your own confession, your own, literally, your own mouth, that does not mechayev mammon. Now, that phrase is not clear right now. The Gemara will clarify that in a few lines. But in the meantime, what you say on your own doesn't obligate you to pay money. Yet, what you say does obligate you to swear, as in the case of partial confession. Eidim shemechayven oisoi mammon, witnesses that have the power to impose your obligation to pay money, Einodin shemechayven oisoi shvuah, all the more so, would have the power to impose upon you the need to swear. There's a bracketed section which we can skip initially, because this, having said the Kal Vachomer, if you skip to the inverted triangle, Ma L'Piv, here we have an undoing of that Kal Vachomer. How can you suggest that Piv is a weaker element than Edim, and hence develop a Kal Vachomer? To the contrary, Ma L'Piv, Shekein Mechayvo Korban, Tomar B'Edim Shein Mechayvo Noisei Korban, one's own confession can lead to someone bringing a sacrifice. There's a pasuk that says, "V'hisvado asher choto v'hevin." Person confesses his having sinned, and he then brings a sacrifice. Witnesses, on the other hand, if they testify about someone having an obligation to bring a sacrifice, and the individual confronts them, contradicts them, denies what they say, he does not bring a sacrifice. So witnesses are actually in a weaker position. Therefore, if you're going to tell me that Piv brings you to a Shavuah, I don't necessarily know from that that Aiden would bring you to a Shavuah. So what we just demonstrated is that though you thought there was a Kal Vachomer from Piv, which would be based on showing a weakness in Piv relative to Edim, to the contrary, Piv has a strength over witnesses, thereby preventing me from coming to the conclusion that witnesses who testify about partial debt would make me take a Shavua. Now, in developing the first Kal Vachomer, though, we said that Piv is not Mechayev Momen. Within the bracketed section that we skipped, we want to evaluate that. Is that really true? The Gemara, in the brackets, Upiv ein mechayva mamon. Is that so that your confession doesn't bring you to a financial obligation? If a person confesses owing money, he will say, volunteers the information on his own, saying, I owe so-and-so $100. He is obligated. That confession is tantamount to the testimony of 100 witnesses. So how can you say that Piv is not Mechayev Momon? The Gemara explains, my Momon Knas. The Momon referred to in the attempted Kal Vachomer is a fine, a Knas payment. A knas payment is the kind of payment that you find throughout the Torah, which is a financial obligation that doesn't reflect the actual damage or cost involved. An example of that would be a ganav pays twice the value of the item that he stole if he stole in a stealthful fashion. He pays kefel. An eved Kanani that is killed by someone's Shor Hamuad, the owner of the slave receives 30 sloyim, 30 pieces of silver as payment, regardless of the value of the slave. Those are examples, just two of many examples of Knas payment. If a person confesses on his own, my animal killed your slave, he does not have to pay. So the Gemara says, now with that in mind, Uma Piv She'ein Mechayvo Knas Mechayvo Shvua, a person who's volunteered information regarding Knas exempts him from paying the Knas, paying that fine. And yet, his confession about owing part obligates him in swearing. Adim shemechayven oso knas, if witnesses testify that so-and-so's animal killed a slave, or any of the other examples of knas, the defendant has to pay the knas because of the testimony of the witnesses. Eino din shemechayven oso shvua, then certainly the witnesses can obligate him in swearing in the case that they testified about the partial debt that was owed. The Gemara says, if you're trying to make a kal v'chomer from piv, ma le piv, piv is not a weaker entity than witnesses that you can use piv as a jumping off point for developing the kal v'chomer. Shekein mechaivo korban. Toimar b'edim shein mechaivo noisei korban. One's confession regarding owing a sacrifice binds him to bring the sacrifice. Witnesses who testify about someone needing to bring a sacrifice, and the party in concern denies that, the witnesses don't obligate him to bringing the sacrifice. The Gemara responds, "Ho lo kashya, that's not an objection to the kal v'chomer. Reb Chia, k'Rebbi Meir svirole, diomer edim mechayven oisoi korban mikal v'chomer." Rebbi Chia, who is the basis of our entire discussion, holds like Rebbi Meir that says Adim do, witnesses do obligate a person to bringing a sacrifice. You notice that we have several lines in brackets. These brackets are designed for an initial skipping. If you skip them, you'll arrive immediately at the rejection of the kal v'chomer. And let's do so. It just for our first read through, skipping the bracketed section, Ela ma la piv, you can't suggest that piv is a basis for the kal v'chomer. Shekein mechayvo chomesh, based on a person's confession, if he had, let us say, he swore falsely and in his false oath he denied owing money, and then he confessed that he swore falsely, he has to pay the principal and add a fifth. That is called chomesh. That payment is something that upon your word, your confession, you become obligated to pay. The thinking is that a person's confession does bring him to that, but witnesses would not bring him to paying chomesh. What do we see? We see, therefore, that peh has a stronger element to it than the testimony of witnesses. The Gemara will respond to that, as you can see, immediately. Before we get to that, though, we did skip a section of Gemara. Why did we skip? Because we wanted to maintain the logical flow, presenting the suggested kal v'chomer and then the rejection thereof. Now, within the brackets, the Gemara gives you the background or the Tanaic source in which you see Rebbe Meir saying that Adim, witnesses, can in fact obligate an individual to bringing a sacrifice as well. Not only your own confession, but witnesses as well. So that the kal v'chomer from peh will stand. The brackets. Disnan, Omru lo shnayim. Two witnesses say, Achalta chelev, you ate forbidden fats. Vehu omer lo achalti. And the defendant says, no, I didn't. Rebbe Meir mechayev. Rebbe Meir says that based on the witnesses testifying that he ate chelev, he has to bring a sacrifice. Vechachomim potrin. The chachomim, though, hold him to be exempt. Omar Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Meir says, "Im heviu shnayim lidei miso." If two witnesses can condemn a person to death, if two witnesses come and testify that so and so violated Shabbos or so and so committed a murder, they are responsible for bringing him to miso chamura. Chamura means that's a very severe form of punishment.
Lo yivu lidei korban akal. Are you going to think that they can't bring him to an obligation of bringing a sacrifice?
So you see Rebbe Meir's point that witnesses, based on this kal vachomer, if they can bring him to a severe punishment of misa, of court execution, certainly they can bring a person to bringing to having to offer a sacrifice, which is kal, which is lighter, a lighter penalty than suffering death. So at that point, you see that Rebbe Chia, who holds like Rebbe Meir, shows us that witnesses obligate a person to bringing a sacrifice as well. Now we have these internal brackets. The circular type brackets that you see are here only to isolate the Chachomim's response, because in our discussion we're not really focusing on the Chachomim. Our main interest was to highlight Rebbe Meir. Right after the circular brackets, you have the Gemara saying, you see an inverted triangle, but it's dashed. The reason for this dashed form is that this is presented as an undoing of the kal vachomer, but it doesn't work, it doesn't last. So after having presented Rebbe Chia, holding like Rebbe Meir, maintaining our kal vachomer from Peh, we would then skip the circular brackets and read Ela Ma Lepiv Shekein Mechayvoy Osham. If a person confesses a type of sin that requires the bringing of a Osham sacrifice, now the Osham sacrifice is brought when a person swears falsely, denying owing money, and then confesses, he has to bring a Korban Osham, and that, by the way, is in addition to the fifth that that a person is obligated to bring. We made reference to that Chomesh a little earlier, but the Osham and the Chomesh are part of that example. And what do we see? That a person who confesses having sworn falsely and denying money, he has to bring a Korban Osham. And the thinking at this moment is that's what Peh accomplishes, but witnesses not so. The Gemara says, what do you mean by that? Osham hainu korban. Osham is a sacrifice, and we already demonstrated that witnesses, according to Rebbe Meir, do obligate you in bringing a sacrifice. We skipped a section that was in the circular brackets. Let's read it now, but with the sense of de-emphasis. Omru lo, the Chachomim, responded to Rebbe Meir and his kal vachomer regarding witnesses obligating someone to bring a sacrifice, and they said that, listen, if a guy tells witnesses, he says to them, I did not eat the chalev, after they testified that he ate the chalev, when he says I did not eat the chalev, is he telling the truth or not? Is he lying in order to get out of having to bring a sacrifice? Is that his goal? So he simply wants to avoid bringing a sacrifice. Omru lo, the Rabbonan said, Ma im yirtze loimar, if his whole point was simply to get out of having to bring a sacrifice, he could have said, Meizin hoyisi, iftar. I ate the chalev just like you say. I don't deny what you said, but I did so deliberately. If a person sins in a deliberate fashion, he doesn't bring a sacrifice. The sacrifice is brought to atone for the unintentional type violation, not an intentional, amazing violation. So if the individual in question was only trying to get out of the obligation to bring a sacrifice, he could have said, I did so intentionally. But he didn't say that. He said, I did not eat. Therefore, the Rabbonan tend to believe the individual, and even though witnesses say that he ate the chalev, according to the Rabbanan, he wouldn't have to bring a sacrifice. All that having been said, that's really to be de-emphasized right now in our discussion. Rebbe Meir, though, says that witnesses bring a person, just like Piv, witnesses likewise bring a person to having to offer a sacrifice. We now continue with the Gemara after the entire bracketed section,
Elo, if you want to challenge Rebbe Chiya's Kavachomer, you say as follows: Ma lepiv shekein mechayva choymish. We already explained this, but that a person who swore falsely, denying money, denying a financial obligation, then confessed, he has to pay an additional fifth. And the thinking at this moment is that is something that one's confession obligates him, but not witnesses. One says, well, the holokashi, that's not a challenge to the Kavah Homer, that's not a difficulty. Rabbi Chiya ka Rabbi Meir Sviro Lei, Rabbi Chiya adopts Rabbi Meir, lock, stock, and barrel. Ki hechi de mechayev lei korban mikal v'chomer. Just like witnesses obligate him to bringing a sacrifice through the kal v'chomer we saw above in the framed section, mechayev lei choymesh mikal v'chomer. The witnesses obligate him to bring to pay the chomesh through the same kal v'chomer logic. Elo ma lepiv. If you want to undo the Kal V'chomer, you would do as follows. Ma lepiv shekein einoi behakosha ubahazoma. Toimar be'edim sheyeshnon behakosha ubahazoma. Peh, one's own confession, has a strength that puts it above and beyond witnesses. In what sense? If a person, let us say, confessed, I owe you $100. And witnesses would come and contradict him, be makhish him, hakosha, makhish, contradict him, saying, you don't owe him the $100. The law is, like you said, like your pay, you have to pay the $100, based on the concept of hoidoas baal, din kamea edim domi. The confession that one articulates on his own is like the strength of 100 witnesses. So the strength of peh is greater than two witnesses. If two witnesses come and testify that so-and-so owes money, and two other witnesses contradict that and say he does not owe the money, the first witnesses are knocked out. Not only that, but if two other witnesses come and say, regarding the first set of witnesses, how can you testify that so-and-so owes the money when you were with us on that day that you claim so-and-so borrowed that money? That's called hazoma. The original witnesses can be knocked out not only through contradiction, but through hazoma as well. That is, the law says that when edim are shown to be zoymimim, when they were with others in another place at that time, and they were trying to falsely obligate through their testimony someone to pay, they have to pay the amount. Those rules apply to witnesses. We'll show highlighting an element of weakness in testimony, which you do not find by pay. So that how can you suggest a Kal V'chomer using peh as your jumping off point, namely that peh, though it's weak in its nature, Kal V'chomer had been, it's weak in its nature that it's not mechayev momon, and yet it's mechayev shvua. Two witnesses that are mechayev momon certainly can mechayev shvua. Here we're saying, what do you mean peh is weaker than the two witnesses? Peh is not subject to rejection through hakosha and hazoma, and witnesses, though, are subject to that rejection. Witnesses are a weaker element. So how can Reb Chiya suggest a Kal V'chomer using peh as his jumping off point? Hello, and here we have Roman numeral number 2, we'll call this going back to the drawing board as far as the Kal V'chomer that Reb Chiya suggests in trying to reach the conclusion that two witnesses that testify concerning partial debt in the face of someone having denied entirely as a basis for generating a shvua on that balance that the fellow continues to deny. How do we come to that, say, that conclusion that the two witnesses are certainly going to be Mechayev and Shavua? So the Gemara says, Elo, Asya, it will be derived, May Eid Echad, from the law regarding a singular witness, using the laws regarding a singular witness as our jumping off point for the Kal Vachomer. Just an additional structural note, you'll notice we have an Aleph on the side under our Mivneh heading. We indicate that the Aleph and Beis, HaKal Vachomer May Eid Echad Mofia B'Shnei Shlavim. The Kal Vachomer from Eid Echad will appear in two stages. The first here, and then when we get to the second line from the top, we will see stage Beis. Uma Eid Echad She'ein Mechayvoy Momoin Mechayvoy Shvua. If one witness comes along and says that Mr. A borrowed money from Mr. B, and Mr. A says, I did not borrow money from Mr. B, the testimony of a singular witness does not obligate Mr. A to pay the loan. And yet, the testimony of the singular witness will obligate Mr. A, who's denying the debt, to swear to that effect. Eidim shemechayvin oisai mamon, two witnesses who say that Mr. A borrowed the money, Mr. A will have to pay on their word. Eino din shemechayvin oso shvua, then all the more so, they should be capable, in the case of their testimony concerning half the amount or partial debt that the one being claimed from shall swear concerning the balance. The Gemara says, not so. Challenge to the Kal Vachomer. Ma liyed echad, shekein al ma shehu meid hu nishba. How can you learn the shvua that you're expecting two witnesses to impose from the case of the shvua that we know a singular witness imposes? The shvua, the oath that the party will have to take in the face of the singular witness, is an oath that is directly contradictory to what they testified. Namely, if the singular witness, that is, testified, I saw Mr. A borrow money from Mr. B, Mr. A will swear, I did not borrow money from Mr. B. In other words, it's an oath that directly contradicts the testimony of that singular witness. We continue at the top of Daf Dalet. Toimar b'edim, should you say the same thing in the case of the two witnesses when they testify the testimony that Reb Chiya anticipates will lead to a shvua? What was their testimony? Their testimony was that Mr. A, who claims he owes nothing, really owes 50%. What is Mr. A going to swear about? That which they testify? No! That which he denies. Sha'alma shekofar hu nishba. His testimony is not one that contradicts the testimony of the two witnesses. His shvua, his oath, will be regarding his denial. As a result, I wouldn't know from the law of a singular witness imposing an oath that is designed to contradict what he said, to extend that idea of the two witnesses imposing an oath, when the nature of that oath doesn't contradict what the witnesses say. So maybe the testimony of the two witnesses concerning the partial debt doesn't obligate the denier to swear concerning the balance. So where's the Kal Vachomer? Elo Omer Rav Papa Osi Migilgul Shvua D'Eid Echad.
That's very, very terse. Immediately, the Gemara undoes this. You do notice, by the way, we pointed this out earlier, this is now base. It's a second stage of developing a kavachomer from the singular witness, from the Eid Echad. Let us go immediately to Rashi. Third line from the top. Migilgul shvua di Eid Echad. Im nischayev lo shvua ayadei Eid Echad kiramrinon. If a singular witness testified that kind of testimony that obligates the denier to swearing, as we explained already, and the individual trying to collect the debt has an additional claim against the party being claimed from, and that additional taina, that additional claim, that second claim, it's a type of claim over which the Torah would not impose an oath. There are numerous examples. One example that comes to mind would be a claim of land. We have a rule in the Torah, Einish Boyan Ala Karkois. We don't swear concerning land-based claims. Nevertheless, the fellow trying to collect the cash debt also claims that the borrower owes him some land. Since the initial claim is one that does generate an oath, the debt was testified by a singular witness, and the borrower is denying it, so there the Torah imposes upon him an oath. Through the concept of Gilgul Shvua, Gilgul means we roll upon him the obligation to swear concerning the second claim, because there was this initial claim concerning which he had to swear. Rashi goes on, Megalgalin Oiso Im Shvuazos V'nishba Al Shnehem. That second claim that on its own would not have warranted an oath, as a result of the initial claim demanding an oath, we make him swear concerning the second claim as well. V'nishba Al Shnehem, and he swears denying both the cash debt and the owing of any land. The Gilgul Shvua D'oraisa Yidafinu B'Kiddushin V'Amro Ha'isho Amoinei Amen. We learn this concept of rolling a Shvua onto a second claim from a Pasuk in the Torah, without getting into the details of how you see that as that source, how that source proves it. It exists, though. What do we see from this? Hare Shalma Shelo Heid Ho'eid Hu Mashbio. We thought a moment ago that there's a distinction between a singular witness and two witnesses, in that in the case of a singular witness, the oath is there to contradict that which the witness testified. In the case of Gilgul Shvua, that second oath is not an oath that contradicts that which the witness testified. The witness testified about a cash debt. That second oath is a denial of land. It's an oath that is, as Rashi says, lo she'al, it's lo al ma shehid, shal ma shelo heid ho'eid. Concerning the land information is something that the witness didn't testify about that, and yet the defendant has to swear. So in that sense, the Eid Echad is like the testimony, I should say, like the oath that Reb Chiya envisions the two witnesses imposing, namely the oath that would deny the balance, i.e. information that the witnesses did not testify about. The Gemara says that this cannot serve as a basis. Gilgul Shvua does not serve as a basis for demonstrating that an aid echad will generate a shvua that is not contradicting that which he testified. Ma le gilgul shvua de aid echad, the gilgul shvua, that namely that second shvua that we rolled upon the defendant in the case of aid echad, shekein shvua geirers shvua. Toimar be'edim de momon ka mechayvi. Here too we look at Rashi. Across from here, Rashi says, Shekein shvua gerer shvua. Eid lo chayvoi shvua elo alma she'eid. The individual, the singular witness did not obligate him in swearing other than on that which he testified. Vahashvua gerer shvua. It's the oath that the defendant had to swear that causes the second oath to having to be made. Toimar be'edim halolu, should you therefore say regarding the two witnesses, she hachamishim sheidu heim mechayven oisoy l'shalem, the 50% of the debt that they testified that he has to pay, that testimony obligates him to pay the cash. The ein kan shvua ligror al yoda shvua al hashar. There's no oath at all in the vicinity that would be the basis of making him swear concerning the balance. So once again, the whole realm of the eid echad, even if you include the Gilgul Shvua idea, cannot serve as the basis of a Kal Vachomer to the testimony of two witnesses testifying about the balance of the debt. We don't see any grounds for learning from the case of Eid Echad or the case of Gilgul Shvua to the case of two witnesses that obligated him to pay a cash debt, 50% of the amount claimed. Where do you come from that to imposing a shvua on the balance? The Gemara responds, Piv Yochiach, the case of Moida B'Mitzas will prove that there is grounds for the shvua. Rashi says, Piv Yochiach, Moida Mitzas Ataina, where a person confesses part of the debt, Shama shekoifer upiv loy hoida hu nishba. What do we see in the case of Moida B'Mitzas? The oath that he takes is on that which he denied. It's not on that which he confessed. So you see the oath in the case of Moida B'Mitzas, Piv, where a person partially confesses, he swears concerning the amount he denied. So too, in the case of two witnesses, they testified about an amount that he owes. That's similar to a person confessing on his own part of the amount that he owes. In the case of Peh, he swears concerning the amount he denied. So too, in the case of the two witnesses, let him swear concerning the amount that he denied. The Gemara says, you can't make a Kal Vachomer from Peh. Ma lepiv shekein eino b'hakosha. Peh, of course, generates a shvua. Peh, as we saw before, is not subject to contradiction. We mentioned earlier that if a person says, I owe $100, and two witnesses come and say, no, you don't, he'll pay the $100. Two witnesses, though, are subject to contradiction, so they're a weaker element. We respond, Eid Echad Yochiach. The testimony of a singular witness can prove the Kal Vachomer. She Yeshnoi B'Hakosha. A singular witness is subject to contradiction. U'mechayvo Shvua. And we know that a singular witness binds a person into swearing. So you can make a Kal Vachomer from Eid Echad. But you can't. Ma Le'Eid Echad. Shekein Alma She'Meid Hu Nishba. the nature of the swearing in the case of Eid Echad, it's an oath that confronts directly the witness's testimony. In the case of the two witnesses, the anticipated oath isn't contradicting what they said. It's an anticipated oath to verify what he is denying. All right, so we say piv yochiach. In the case of piv, the oath is in fact a concern where he's moidav b'miksas. He is swearing to confirm his denial. V'chozar hadin. The logic will now revolve, because once you say peh yochiach, you can then challenge, like we saw before, that peh is not b'hakosha, and you're going to go round and round. Lo roizeh kiroizeh, v'lo roizeh kiroizeh. The proof brought from one is not like the other, and the proof brought from the other is not like this one. Hatzad hashova shebohen, the common denominator between piv and Eid Echad, shal yedei taina ukvira heboin v'nishba, they come to be through an initial claim. There is a denial, and there is an oath taken. Both in the case of Moedah b'miksas, there was an initial claim, you owe me 100, and the respondent says, I owe you only 50. So there was initial claim. There was a partial denial, or a complete denial. In the case of Eid Echad, the defendant contradicted that which the witness said. And the result in both cases is an oath is taken, where the defendant swears that he does not owe that which is being claimed from him. Af ani ovi edim. I will, by the same token, introduce the case of the two witnesses, like Rebbe said, shayadei tainu kfira hein boim. The two witnesses come into the picture because a lender had claimed money. The borrower denied owing the money. The witnesses testifying that part of the money is owed. Therefore, it follows suit that a shvua will be taken. Ma la tzad hashova shebohen. You cannot conclude from the tzad hashova, the common denominator between piv and Eid Echad, shekein lo huchsu kafron. In both cases, we'll accept his shvua. This is, he hasn't been proven to be a liar. Toimar b'edim, should you be able to say the same thing in the case of two witnesses? Shekein huchsu kafron. The guy denied owing any money, denied completely. Two witnesses come along and say, you do owe 50%. He's a liar. He's a shown liar. How can we therefore conclude that we'll accept a shvua from someone like that? The Gemara asks, Ube'edim mihusu kafron? Is that really true that he's a demonstrated liar, thief? Because the two witnesses said he owes partial when after he denied owing everything. He's not considered a lowlife thief that would be that we would find unacceptable in swearing. Someone who denies b'milve kosheli edus. If a person denies owing a loan and witnesses show that he testify that he does owe, he is not disqualified from serving as a witness. There's the logic behind that is that the denial of the loan was merely a means of buying time till he would amass the money. That's a reasonable excuse for why he denied. And we don't therefore classify him as a wicked individual, as a thief. In contrast, though, b'pikadon, someone who denies having an entrusted item, and witnesses say, what do you mean you don't have the entrusted item? You have it. It's there in your closet. Posolietus, by denying having the entrusted item and witnesses testifying to the contrary,
He is shown to be a thief. He was trying to make off with that entrusted item. And that disqualifies him as serving as a witness. So the suggestion that in the case of Piv and Eid Echad, he's not a kafron, but where two witnesses testify, he's a kafron, and therefore we should not accept his shmua, he's not a kafron. Elo porechochi. If you want to undo the tzad hashoveh, the common denominator, and show that you cannot conclude that two witnesses will generate a shvua just like Peh and Eid Echad, say as follows. Ma lahatzad hashoveh shebohen shekein einon b'toiras hazoma. The concept of disqualifying an individual or a singular witness on the basis of hazoma. We explained hazoma earlier, where after two witnesses testify condemning a person to, let us say, pay money, two other witnesses come and say, how can you testify about that? You were with us on that day that you claim the debt was incurred. So those two witnesses themselves, who try to falsely indict someone into paying money, they have to pay the money. That is a payment that we term it a knas. If a singular witness would find himself under similar circumstances, or an individual in his claims would find himself under those circumstances, he would not have to pay in the same way. They would be exempt. They don't have to pay that which they were trying to indict the other. A singular witness who said, I saw you on such and such a day borrow money, and two witnesses will say, how can you say that when you were with us? The singular witness would not be made to pay the money, so that the peh and the ein echad have a strength that you do not, that you don't find by the two witnesses. Two witnesses are subject to rejection through hazoma. And as such, I would say that Peh and Eid Echad, they can generate a shvua, but two witnesses that are subject to hazoma. Let's read that again from the inverted triangle. Ma lahatzad hashoveh shebohen shekein einon b'toras hazoma. Toimar bi'edim, should you be able to say the same thing by two witnesses? Sheyeshnon b'toras hazoma. They are liable to hazoma, and therefore I don't know that they could generate a shvua. Ha lo kasha. That is not an objection. That does not show the weakness of two witnesses. Rabbi Chiya, toiras hazoma lo porach. Rabbi Chiya, who, don't forget, was the subject of our entire discussion, he feels that you cannot demonstrate the weakness of two witnesses because of the law of hazoma. We look at Rashi in the lower part of the narrow lines. Torah hazoma lo porach, eino tshuva. That's not considered in Rabbi's eyes a weakening of the Kal V'chomer. The Kevon di Eid Echad Yeshno behazoma livatel eduso keedus shnei edim im have lon lemeimar beedim mishum di Yeshnon behazoma lo yechayvu shvua have lon lemeimar nami beed echad lo yechayvu shvua. Rashi just explained that the idea of hazoma does have relevance to an eid echad. In what sense? If two witnesses would come after the testimony of a singular witness, saying to him, how can you testify regarding that matter? You were with us in another place at that time. What happens?
the testimony of that singular witness is voided. It's true that he doesn't have to pay the money that he was trying to obligate the defendant in paying, but his testimony is voided, just like the case of the two witnesses and their initial testimony. Their testimony would be voided. We continue in the Rashi. V'imishum de'ei mishalim knas. If you'll say, well, the eid echot still is stronger than the two witnesses in the sense that he doesn't have to pay the money that he tried to impose on the defendant, whereas the two witnesses that were shown to be zoymimim would have to pay. Ein b'zu yipui koyach la'amin eduso. That point of law does not increase the strength of believing the witness. So Rav Chia does not accept the attempt to reject his Kal Vachomer through raising the issue of Hazoma, which we attempted to ask before. So at this point in the Gemara, where are we holding? We're holding with Reb Chiya's original din, that someone who was charged money, you owe me as a result of borrowing $100. Borrower denies, I don't owe you anything. Two witnesses come and say, what do you mean you don't owe anything? You owe $50. Reb Chiya says that the defendant will have to swear concerning the second $50 that he is denying. And Rabbi Chia argues thusly based on the idea that Moide b'miksas, he pays what he admits, and he has to swear concerning the balance. If that's the case by a person on his own confession, then certainly in the case of two witnesses, that they would force the defendant to swear concerning the confession. And Reb Chiya arrived at that conclusion through the Kal Vachomer that we just spent an entire omid and a half of Gemara showing. Let us not forget that Reb Chiya also claimed, in addition to stating his din, he also claimed that our Mishnah supports his din. How did the Mishnah support his din? So when Reb Chiya initially presented his case, he said, in the case of the talis, the person holding on to the talis, we bear witness that that which he is holding onto is his. And in order for us to divide the talis, we make him swear. Once again, he who is holding on to the talis is claiming that it is all his. The opponent is denying it entirely. So you have a claim of 100%. You have a denial on the part of the other party of 100%. You have the witnesses in the sense of Anan Sahadi. We, the public, bear witness that that which you are holding is yours. So that 50% is backed up by, we'll say, witnesses, testimony, in the sense, once again, it's not formal testimony, but it's the public bears witness. So that you have testimony concerning 50% being owed. You're denying totally owing anything, yet a shvua has to be taken, as we saw in the Mishnah. The Gemara now says, Ela dekomar v'tona tuna, that which Rabbi Chiya claimed that the Mishnah parallels,
his din, mi domi. How can you compare our Mishnah to the din of Rabbi Chiya? Hasam, in the din of Rabbi Chiya, la malve is le sadi, la loive les le sadi, de lo masik le velo midi. The lender has witnesses. Remember, in Rabbi Chiya's din, a lender claimed, you owe me $100. There were witnesses that help him in his claim, at least to the tune of $50. The lova, the borrower, he's saying, I don't owe you anything. And he has no witnesses that help him out in his claim that he owes nothing. De'i havu le sadi la loive doloimasik leva lomidi. Imagine that that borrower would have had witnesses that would testify on his behalf that he owes nothing. Lo boy Reb Chiya l'shtabui, Reb Chiya would not impose on him a shvua. You have essentially, you would then have a case of two against two. There would be no grounds for a shvua. You would have basically contradictory testimony, and no money would be paid. Hacha, in the case of the talis, kihechi danan sadi lahai, just like we bear testimony to the one guy who's holding the talis saying that he has 50% of it, anan sadi lahai, we bear testimony for the other guy who's holding the other half of the talis. V'afilu hachi mishtaboi. And even so, an oath is imposed. So you have a very clear distinction between what we would have inferred from Rabbi Chiya's case to the case of the Mishnah. In Rabbi Chiya's case, had both sides had witnesses supporting their respective claims, no shvua would have been imposed. In the Mishnah's case, we have witnesses in the form of Anan Sahadi supporting both sides, and yet a shvua is imposed. So Reb Chiya said his din, and we're not denying the accuracy of his din, but to say that his din is based on our Mishnah, that is going too far. That leads the Gemara into the next section, which Mirza Shem will be part of our next shiur, where the Gemara says, Eloki itmar v'tona tuno, a'idoch Rabbi Chiya itmar. That which Rabbi Chiya claimed that our Mishnah is a support to something he said, yes, it is a support to another halacha that he said. Not a halacha concerning two witnesses testifying about a partial debt, but concerning another halacha that Emir Tzashem we will see in our next shiur. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.